Welcome to Ugeria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ugeria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ugeria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ugeria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Brad. It's June 24th. I have Sam and Kevin in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Brad? Straight off a road trip from Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, doing well.
You're a young man. You can handle that stuff.
It really, really wasn't bad, as I was saying before the show. 6 hours yesterday, 6 hours on Sunday. That's not bad at all. I can deal with that. So, we got up Sunday and drove until it was time to watch the soccer game.
Yeah, man, that soccer game, that was a heartbreaker.
Well, yeah, 20 seconds.
Yep.
20 seconds, 20 more seconds. And if they had, in the backfield, if they hadn't given the ball away,
yep. Mm-hmm.
It would have been over.
Well, and believe me, I'm not a soccer fan, so I could be way off base here. But sometime during that game, because of the heat, they took a water break, if I understood correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the time during the water break, though their clock continuously runs, they added back to the end of the game.
But
is that normal?
That's normal.
That's normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, no, I mean, and that stadium, I mean, there's a lot of controversy. It said it should never have been built. It's in not good conditions. So who knows? But we're still in a good position. We're doing a lot better than anyone thought we would do. So.
Absolutely. No, yeah. It's been really exciting so far. You talk about the heat, though. Isn't the next one going to be in Dubai?
Qatar.
Qatar.
Yeah, it's either the next one or the one after that. And there's a lot of FIFA's.
In the summer.
Well, FIFA's in a lot of scandals, of bribery scandals. And there's already been a money that it's exchanged hands. But it's 150 degrees, basically. It's you can't play soccer there.
Yeah,
it's not
it's
possible.
Insane. It's insane. Anyway. So enough of that. We have with us a return guest today for the third time, Elton Reynolds. Good morning, Elton.
Good morning, Brad.
Thanks for taking the time to be here with us.
Sure.
Elton has done a number of things in his career, and Elton and I share a love and affinity for music, and that's how we originally got together, I think, through your wife, Essie. And she had been a guest on the program, and we had worked with her. But Elton has been involved in mental health counseling and that sort of thing for a long, long time, and also been involved in some consulting and transactions in the healthcare industry. Yeah. And yeah. Now you're here to talk to us today about a different topic. And so with no further ado, let's get into that. If you could remind us a little bit about yourself and how you where you're from and where you went to school and how you ended up doing what you're doing right now.
Sure, I'd be glad to do that. This is my 43rd year in healthcare, and it's broken up pretty much 50-50 between clinical work and the business side of healthcare. And I grew up in western New York State and the center of New York State in the Finger Lakes region and also around Fort Lauderdale, Florida. For a number of years, we'd spend our summers up there and our winters in Fort Lauderdale. And just skipping dramatically forward, I went to college for a year, decided I wasn't really mature enough for college, went into the Navy and became a Navy corpsman. And in 1968, 69, part of 70, I was doing psychiatric evaluations of Navy and Marine personnel coming back from Vietnam. That was the beginning of my mental health or healthcare career. And after 4 years in the Navy, then I went back to school, got my undergraduate degree in psychology with an emphasis in abnormal psychology. And then I got a master's degree in the psychology of learning, and combining those two degrees with the experience I'd had in the military and the schools I'd gone to in the military, I was pretty well prepared to go forward. And so I spent about 23 years in the clinical areas of mental health and psychiatry, a wide variety of different types of situations, everything from children to geriatrics and everything in between. So that's kind of a brief overview.
Excellent. And now, did you go to school in Philadelphia? Is that what took you to Philadelphia? I know you and I have talked about Philadelphia an awful lot.
How I happened to end up in Philadelphia was that after I went through basic training and hospital core school in at Great Lakes Naval Training Center out between Chicago and Milwaukee, they sent me to Philadelphia to go through neuropsychiatric technician school. And I completed that school there. And when I finished my military time, my 4 years, 2 years with the Navy, 2 years with the Marine Corps, I had a job offer in Manhattan. And my wife at that time wanted no part of Manhattan. So I took a lesser position at Temple University Hospital in Philadelphia, where I had developed some contacts as I was there almost 3 years, 2.5 roughly. So I was a supervisor in the emergency department at Temple University Hospital and spent 12 years in Philadelphia altogether.
And that was when you obtained your master's from Temple, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Excellent. So let's kind of transition then into what you're going to talk to us about today. Today you're here representing Hypnosis Center of Dunwoody as a certified clinical hypnotherapist.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about that. Tell us about the business. Tell us how you came to be doing this. And then want to transition into a little bit about what it is and what it isn't, and maybe some of the common misconceptions.
Sure. Yeah. I'm also a licensed professional counselor on a national basis, in addition to being a certified clinical hypnotherapist. And for the last 11 years, I have split my time between the emergency work that I do in the metropolitan hospitals here in Atlanta and working in the private practice. Essentially working for my wife. She founded the Hypnosis Center of Dunwoody about 30 years ago, so we've been there a long time. And as Brad had mentioned earlier, I also was involved in mergers and acquisitions and funding of various types of healthcare endeavors. And after 11 years of doing that and consistently working 70 hours a week, I decided that I was going to stop doing the consulting work and focus my time on strictly the clinical activity, which means the Hypnosis Center of Dunwoody and also continuing to do the work in the emergency rooms. So I contacted all of my consulting clients and told them that I was not going to be pestering them for business any longer, but if they needed me to call me. I still knew what I knew, but I wasn't going to try and sell them anything that I happened to know. And it's been a transition. And it's kind of humorous because in one way I had thought I was going to be working less, but I've just found that I'm doing more in the two areas I'm still working in than I did before because I can now as I have the time to do it.
I don't know that I think in rare cases do you end up as you get older you do less. It just seems like there's so much in life going on that you just more and more.
It's a little bit less complex though, and I'm not changing hats as often, which is preferable to what I had been doing.
Well, tell us, I'm interested in how does hypnosis or the practice thereof come into play when you come to the well-being of individuals? I guess to say it differently, tell us what you do.
Sure. Be glad to do that. And one thing that I might mention is that to come and see us, you do not have to have a problem. That's not a requirement.
I laughed because he mentioned to me this off air, and he said, I would like a couple of those clients.
Right, because you can give them one, right?
Give them
problem. No problem. We have plenty for you to choose.
We're fresh out of those problems.
I'm glad Brad crossed that, not me.
And what I mean by that is that we do see people that are looking for life enhancement, and that's the tagline for our company is life enhancement through hypnosis. And then, of course, also there's lots of people who come to us with challenges, you know, things that they're trying to overcome. And one thing that many people like about our practice, and I think men in particular, is I don't tell anybody what to do. Very, very seldom. It's very much client-driven, client-directed what I'm doing. And just to kind of walk you through a little bit of what I do with people, a lot of it is based on transactional analysis, which was developed by a number of people, but Byrne is the person who gets most recognition for it. And I suggest to people that they have a parent ego state, and it's we're not talking about age, we're talking about a mindset. They have an adult ego state and a child ego state. And if they come to me, whether it's with or without a problem, where we start is helping them better understand themselves, the makeup of their own personality, and I will talk to them about what kinds of things are you doing to self-nurture yourself. And sometimes what I'll do is reinforce those things hypnotically. If there's very little that they're doing, we'll do some sort of like brainstorming. What might you be willing to do? And you notice all along I'm asking them what they're doing or what they'd like to be doing. I'm not telling them you ought to be doing this or you ought to be doing that, because people do what they want to do. So I'm reinforcing positive self-nurturance. I am working with them on decreasing or eliminating self-criticism. And a lot of this same stuff, even if you are getting away from the better understanding yourself, you can also look at it as far as relating to others are concerned. How might you nurture the people around you in ways that are acceptable to them and that they're enthused about? And how might you be less critical of them, the people around you? So it enhances the relationship. And you looked like you had a question.
Well, I was going. I'm trying to, as a layperson, follow this. For our listening audience, we have a sheet in front of us that has three categories, and Alton went over there as parent, adult, and child, and then off to the side he has categories, and under parent, the self-nurturing versus the self-criticism. So my question is parenthood, however we define that, whenever it occurs, does a lot of this happen where we start doubting ourselves as parents, or is that, am I trying to make a correlation that is not there?
Well, this teaching is actually built on the original work done by Sigmund Freud, and where that the contents of that parent part comes from initially is the interactions that you have with your biological parent. Were they more nurturing? Were they more critical of yourself?
Okay. And then now I understand.
With many people, what happens is when their parents are no longer around, they treat themselves the same way that their parents did, or their perception of how their parents treated them.
And Brad and I've had this conversation. I mean, the bottom line in my terms, layperson's terms, you do become your parent at some point if you're not very, very good and very careful. That's the way I see it. Well, I see me doing it all the time.
Well, there's some truth to that, but the part I'm focusing on to a great extent is how that parent treated you, and you are you going to treat yourself exactly the same way?
Right,
was it in your best interest?
Right.
And you'll also find that how that parent treated the people around them will also influence your behavior.
What's interesting about that is that you will tend to perpetuate both the successes and the failures of your parents in yourself, right? I mean, if your parents scolded you all the time, you know, you're going to have that propensity to scold yourself.
Yeah, and it can be very time consuming. If you spend all your time beating yourself up, you don't have very little time or energy left to do more constructive things that you could benefit from. And I think it's also interesting in that you'll find people that will, you know, that kind of that old story about the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Some of them will take on the same kinds of behaviors, thoughts, and feelings towards themselves that their parents had, and others will go just completely the opposite.
Right, right. And honestly, it's not that hard to look at and point out, but probably much harder to actually convince yourself that what you can see analytically and what makes sense in your head can actually be changed.
Yeah, it does require some degree of belief or a willingness to consider that the change can occur. And then you're part of why what I'm doing works better than most is that once I know what the person believes that they need to think, feel, and how they need to act, I can reinforce that through the use of clinical hypnosis. And to kind of go down another layer, what we're doing is we're making sure that on a conscious level and on an unconscious level, they're moving towards the same objectives and goals. Because if you don't have that, something that often happens if you're just doing talk therapy is on a conscious level, your intention may be one thing, and on an unconscious level, your subconscious mind is saying, who are you kidding? You know, ain't going to happen. So what I'm doing is making sure that the unconscious buys into the same degree that the conscious mind does, and the likelihood of something happening and staying fixed goes up dramatically. So, and unless you have another question, I'll move on to the next portion.
Ahead.
Then, as you'll recall, a few moments ago, I mentioned the adult part of the mind, the adult ego state, and that's where your cognitive skills are, your decision-making. So once again, I'm asking people, what decisions have you made that you're pleased about that we might reinforce, to see that you follow through with those decisions as far as your behavior is concerned? Or I'll ask them, what decisions do you feel you need to make? And then they'll say, well, I need to decide about this, that, or the other thing. Well, what would it take for you to make those decisions? Then again, I'll reinforce whatever it is they say that it would help them make those decisions, again, using the hypnosis. So that's a little bit of what that's about. And then the last area, which I find possibly more interesting than the others, is the child area or ego state. And that's where joy, happiness, creativity, fun, spontaneity resides. So we're talking about how might the person bring more joy, happiness, creativity, fun, all the stuff that possibly a 5-year-old would thoroughly enjoy into their daily lives. And when they tell me, what they'd like to do more of or what they need to do to be able to do more of it, then again, I reinforce it using the hypnosis. So we're looking here to kind of blend all of this together, the self-nurturance, good decision-making, feeling comfortable with more self-nurturance, feeling comfortable with better decision-making and the consequences of those decisions that they're making, and then integrating more of the fun stuff into their lives. And to go back to talking about relating to other people, if you're in a meaningful relationship with another person, whether it be a family member, a friend, a loved one, whatever it might be, in addition to nurturing yourself and thinking of ways and acting on them that you might nurture that other person in ways that's acceptable to them or to both of you, you look at, okay, what decisions might we work on jointly, kind of a team approach. And I use a lot of this also in when I'm doing couples therapy or in families. And then the last thing is, how might we play together, mm-hmm. in the child area? Mm-hmm. Let's have some play dates, and what might they consist of?
Let's take a step back, if you would, because, and maybe kids today are, younger people today are more open to the idea of hypnotism and hypnotherapy, but particularly for us, our clients, our older clients, they have perhaps a perception of hypnosis that is just not accurate. The idea that, you're going to have some guy standing in front of them with a watch, swinging in front of their eyes saying you're getting very sleepy, and, next thing they're barking like a dog. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, absolutely a false perception of what it is. But, you know, talk to that a little bit.
Sure.
And then talk to how we can talk to our seniors, because I think you and I had talked about the fact that this is just as effective if, with seniors as it would be with anybody.
Any age group.
Mm-hmm. And so how can we maybe get over some of the hurdles that a senior might have in their mind about what it is and, you know, the stigma associated with it?
Well, one thing to remember is that no one can be hypnotized who doesn't want to be hypnotized. Anyone who is being hypnotized, what it is it's an increased level of awareness. It's relaxation, receptivity to positive thoughts, suggestions, recommendations, things of that sort. Then the client is never, ever out of control in any way, shape, or form.
And my understanding is, I heard you say earlier, you're never going to do something you don't want to do. So it's not like you can plant suggestions that would be counter to their belief system or to what they would actually want to do.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing woo-woo about it at all. You know, it's just someone says, this is what I want to do, and I'll help them clarify it, and then I'll relax them, and then I'll make some suggestions as to ways that they might accomplish what it is that they want to accomplish. And if there's a reasonable degree of receptivity to it, then we're going to have a good outcome.
And they're awake the whole time, right? I mean, they're talking to you. They're interacting with you.
So
albeit in a relaxed state, but nevertheless, they're not conked out where you're feeding suggestions to them in a coma or something like that.
No, nothing of that sort.
So here's the layperson in trying to clarify the conversation that you two just had. You are positive reinforcing what the client's already saying, but for whatever reason, lack of doubt, lack of information, whatever it may be, you are giving that, give they say they want to do. Did I say that anywhere close to being correct?
Yeah, definitely for the most part, yeah. And this might be a good point in time to talk about one case that was a senior that I did some work with, and it'll give you an example of how this can apply. And it'll also bring another aspect of the work that I do into the conversation. A gentleman came to me who was in his 60s, and he had been married. He was a widower. His wife had passed away, and about 3 or 4 years had passed since she died. And there was a woman that he had developed a relationship with, and this woman wanted to marry him. He wanted to marry her. However, he was finding himself very distrustful, suspicious, a lot of unpleasant feelings and thoughts about this woman. And he was very open about the fact that he said, she's doing nothing to deserve my suspicions or my doubts, you know, regarding her. Mm-hmm. How do I get over this so I can go ahead and marry this woman and we can enjoy the rest of our lives together? So what we did was some regression work. In other words, I relaxed him into a fairly deep trance. And then by tapping on his forehead, I took him back year by year. And I said, the first time something comes up, I said, don't try and think of anything, but as soon as something comes up that you think might relate, you know, to this situation, let me know. Well, we got back to age 12, and he said, I just remembered something I'd forgotten all about. I said, what's that? He said, when I was 12, I found out that my mom was having an affair with somebody. I said, okay. I said, all right, well, what conclusions did you draw from that awareness? And he said, well, I decided that women just absolutely could not be trusted. Just no way. And I said, okay, well, what behaviors did you decide were appropriate based on that conclusion? Well, that I was never, ever going to trust a woman. Okay. I said, well, do you have any idea why you were able to trust the woman you did marry?
The first wife.
He said, well, I'm not really sure, but he said, I managed to somehow do that, and it worked out just fine. So I said, so in other words, you are capable of trusting a woman. He said, yeah, you're right, I am. So what we had to do was sort of some looking at the conclusions that he had drawn as a 12-year-old and kind of updating them and saying, okay, do you think it's a good idea to generalize that all women are anything but trustworthy? Well, no, not really. So we had to do some sort of re-scripting. I had to help him draw some new conclusions and consider some new behaviors. And he was delighted with the work that we did. They got married, and to the best of my knowledge, everything worked out fine. But until we went back and discovered the cause of this discomfort, suspicion, and negativity, I don't think he would have been able to marry her.
Can you explain why he was able to overcome his distrust one time and not a second time? Is there any, and I don't even know if that's relative, but that, I find that interesting.
I really don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what was unique or different or out of the ordinary about the first wife. I don't know.
And again, relationships are different, so it could have certainly been there. I just find that interesting.
So let's kind of pursue this a little bit more in terms of how our clients, how our elderly population might pursue this with you. From what I understand, you start with a conversation with a client.
Yeah, I do. I have a lot of questions that I ask people because I want to understand as much as I can about where they're at, where they've come from, and where they'd like to go. I'm very uncomfortable with people who do the kind of work that I do and they don't know enough about the person to really handle things appropriately. They charge off in a direction without really having a better sense of the person. And I also look at each individual as part of a system. So I want to know as much as I can about them because I think everything impacts everything else. You know, it's a little bit like a kettle, a hot water kettle. And the steam's going to come out somewhere, and I want to look around until I find out where it's coming out.
So this initial conversation to get to know a client, how long does that take typically?
I'll devote about an hour and a half. It depends on the complexity. Have they had a lot of treatment in the past? If they haven't, then obviously I'm not going to spend a lot of time asking questions about the treatment they've had. Are they taking a lot of medications? If they're not, then that's not as time consuming. If it so happened that they had some substance abuse issues, I'm going to ask about that in detail. It just depends on how much information they provide to me, and then I go into a reasonable depth on each one of those.
Now, would that be a first session and then they would come back to be hypnotized, or would you do it in the same session?
If the initial evaluation, if it isn't extremely time-consuming, in other words, if they've had very little past treatment, they're not on a lot of medications, there isn't the substance abuse, there isn't a lot of things that I need to document, then I will go ahead and, especially if they haven't been hypnotized before, I will spend a portion of the session doing some brief hypnosis with them just so they can have some sense of what it's going to feel like. Mm. As far as doing any extensive or in-depth treatment in that first session, it's not likely.
Okay. And then how many sessions might somebody go through? And I know I'm sure that varies broadly, but typically how many times are you seeing a client?
most often 3 to 5 times. Now, there's some things that person's had a problem that's a lifetime, you know, issue, then it could be longer. And then even after the 3 to 5 times, some people will come back for reinforcement if they feel as though they're not sticking to what it was that they've decided to do, the commitments that they've made to themselves or to others.
Right. Okay. And again, just in terms of helping our listeners understand how this might go, so your offices, they walk in, and what does the office setting look like? What can somebody expect when they would come to see you?
Well, you, of course, come in the front door. There's a nice reception area, which is comfortable and updated. And the receptionist lets me know, or Essie, my wife, depending on who the appointment's with, that you're there. And we come out and greet you. And if we haven't sent some initial paperwork to you using the internet, then I'll give it to the person and ask them to fill it out. Sometimes they'll come in and have it in hand. And then we'll walk down to the office, and I'll tell them I'm going to take a few moments to review the information that that they've brought with them. Or have just filled out. Sometimes if I have received it in advance, I'll have already done that.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's pretty much what.
So they come into your office, or do you have specific rooms that you do the treatment in? Or?
Well, the room that the sessions are held in has a large recliner. Very comfortable, and it goes back, so they're stretched out. And
low light, music, or
all the above. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And you had asked me, Brad, about how do we go about relaxing someone or hypnotizing them. And I'll start out with some breathing exercises. I'll ask them to get into a nice rhythmic breathing pattern and to focus on their inhalations and exhalations. And then I'll ask them to focus on their feet, and I'll tell them their feet are relaxing, and I'll come up their body. And I'm doing this in sort of a monotone way. And then I'll tell them that the relaxation is going down their arms, to their hands, to their fingertips, and that there's valves on the tips of each of their fingers, and any discomfort, any anxiety, anything that doesn't serve them well is passing out through those open finger those valves. And I take the relaxation to the top of their head and then remind them that their entire body is now relaxed. And then what I will do is get them to visualize a place that they find very comfortable and inviting and relaxing. You know, it could be a meadow somewhere or the seashore or wherever they find comfortable. And then the third phase of the induction or the relaxation, I will tell them to picture either stair steps or an elevator. And I take them down, going from 10 down to 1, and then I keep reinforcing that each step they go down, they're becoming more and more relaxed, more and more comfortable. And once we get to that, then many times I'll do some work with the adult part of them. I'll strengthen hypnotically their ability to make decisions. And then each session where we go from there, it depends on what they're there for.
Hmm. And a typical session is an hour or hour and a half? Or
The first session is 90 minutes. The second one, I tell people we're going to work for an hour and 15 minutes. If we're into something that requires going on to an hour and a half, there's no additional cost for that. We'll just do it just because I don't want to have anyone leaving with loose ends.
Sure, sure. And is this something that insurance ever pays for?
Yes. We provide people with the necessary paperwork so that they can turn it into their insurance company and get reimbursed. And unless somebody contacts their insurance company, in advance and finds out, other than that, you just submit it and cross your fingers.
And Medicare, does Medicare ever pay for it?
We don't accept Medicare. We tried it for a while, and we just do not have the support staff that's necessary to handle all the paperwork.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not – you can't make money by employing someone to be in compliance.
Well,
to remain – or
you know, part of it is, sure, we could do a lot more with insurance, but then the fees would have to go up dramatically, and I don't want that, and for the most part, the public doesn't want that either.
So the majority of your clients are then our private pay?
Correct.
Alton, let me kind of sum this up for our listening audience. Is it possible, and again, clinically, maybe you don't want to even touch this, to take a senior, you know, a 65-plus individual that recognizes that they have a lifetime of destructive characteristics, personality, behavior, whatever it may be. They admit it, and they want to change. Can they? Can you help them?
Can you be a little more specific?
I don't know.
Well, I can. All right. So you know, because as you were talking, several things popped into my mind. One, fear of death. Two, loneliness from having lost a spouse. Number three, inability to sleep. So there's three right out of the gate.
Yeah. Inability to sleep, we can definitely help with. The loneliness, assuming that they're willing to be kind to themselves, in other words, increasing the self-nurturance, being willing to, if need be, join organizations, you know, find places that they can be where there's other people to interact with, to have, I was kidding, but I was also somewhat serious, those play dates with, mm-hmm. you know, that's all, you know, pretty easy. And also something that I think is important is that I'm a very honest person. Like I had a fellow come to me who was in his 60s recently, and he said, as far as I can tell, there's nothing wrong with my life, but I'm dissatisfied. He said, you know, I have enough money. I have family nearby. I'm seeing a woman, and it's an okay relationship, and so on and so forth. And I just said to him, okay, you've felt dissatisfied for a long time. Is that true? And he said, yes. I said, okay. I said, well, for some reason, you have significant need to feel, to hold on to this dissatisfaction and this unhappiness. I'm not going to get in a tug of war with you. In other words, even with just the short period of time we've been talking, you've convinced me that there's some secondary gain to feeling dissatisfied. Mm-hmm. I said, if you want to get psychoanalyzed, this isn't the place, and maybe somebody could find out, you know, what's way, way, way down there. But I said, as far as me trying to convince you that you ought to feel good when you have all the reasons to and you're unwilling to, we're not going to do that.
What about another thing that just occurred to me, and I think this is really, really common in our clients and our seniors, is the idea that all their best years are behind them, and the, you know, kind of a depression at, you know, all I've got to look forward to now is the collapse of my mind and body, and that's it. And I'm going to be a burden to my family, and we just see that so much. Is that something you can help with, or?
What we're looking to do with someone like that is, if they're willing to look at things in a more positive fashion, and to feel a sense of, trying to think of the word, in other words, it's feeling grateful for what they do have as opposed to focusing on what they don't. And also, there's such a thing as constructive denial. Like I know of a gentleman who used to read the paper every day. And when he finished, he would wad it up and say, this is hogwash, and throw it away. Because he said, if I focused on all the negativity that was in the news, he said, I wouldn't be able to get out of bed, you know? So the answer to your question is that we will work with them on deepening their sense of the positive things that they do have. We're certainly not going to be able to get the negative things to totally go away. But what you experience in life is whatever you think about most. And if you and if you're constantly, you know, obsessing about negativity, you're going to attract more and more negativity to yourself, emotionally, physically, spiritually.
I once, a long time ago, when I began my professional career, and I he might have been a therapist. I can't. Whitley, I don't remember his name. I think Whitley is the name, but nevertheless, he advocated your most dominating thought becomes reality. And that has stuck with me. And so, obviously, if your most dominating thought has to do with something that's bad or negative or what, I mean, how are you going to react the rest of your day?
I think another thing that's important also, if at all possible, if there's anything that you can do for others to get your mind off your own problems so that you're not constantly thinking about what you don't like about your life, the better you're going to feel overall.
And that goes right along to what I'm saying. If you can put away those negative thoughts and focus on positives, then where are you going to be? I mean, I you know, I know it's simple, it's simplistic, and I'm not trying to suggest that it's that easy, but I've always remembered that, you know.
I did something one time for a gentleman that was in hospice, and this wasn't a long-term fix, but just the same, he enjoyed it, I enjoyed it. I knew what kind of music he liked. So I took a CD player to the hospice. I set it up next to his bed, and I played the kind of music that I knew that he had loved all his life. Mm-hmm. And he was in a coma. Mm-hmm. He had a smile on his face. His foot started going up and down to the music.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I gave him a little bit of a reprieve.
Yeah,
you know,
that's great.
For a little while, he probably stopped thinking about, I don't have long to live, and just enjoying what was there to be enjoyed.
The moment.
Yeah. Right.
Well, Alton, I hate to cut this off, but we're over. It's always a pleasure when you're here. You bring information to us that is very rich, and it's thought-provoking. And I thank you for being our guest.
My pleasure.
I want to invite you back, and if there's another topic that you think is pertinent, please feel free to let us know, and we'll have you on for a fourth time.
Okay, thank you.
Tell our listening audience how they can reach you if they they want to do so.
The Hypnosis Center of Dunwoody's at 3 Dunwoody Park, and that is off exit 30. It's pretty much dead center in the middle of the Northern Arc of 285. And just a quick aside, the Atlanta School of Massage is right next to our offices, so you can come in and get your body worked on as well as your mind if you care to. And the office number is 770-390-0444. And I also invite people, if they want to call me on my personal cell phone, I have no problem with that. That's 404-932-2755. And if you look on the internet, hypnosisdunwoody.com, that's where you'll find us, and it'll give you lots of information about what kinds of things we work on, my background, my wife's background. Between the two of us, we have 73 years of experience, and wow. We're still at it.
Still looking. All right.
And you're both in your 40s.
Correct.
Well, once again, thank you for being our guest, and we want to thank our listening audience for being with us today and remind them that they can listen to a rebroadcast of today's show at ugeriaradio.com. And as always, we want to say that if the youth of this nation is its greatest natural resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.